This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye, I'm Jesse Thorne. John Leguizamo, the actor, works a lot. Like, he has more than 150 credits on his IMDb. Carlito's Way, The Pest, The Ice Age movies, To Wong Fu, almost infinitely more. He recently starred in the Academy Award-winning animated smash Encanto. He played Bruno. The Bruno that we don't talk about.
We don't talk about Bruno.
But as great as all of those screen roles are, they're only one facet of Leguizamo's work. For 30 years, Leguizamo has also been working in the theater, making award-winning solo shows like Mambo Mouth, Sexaholics, and Freak. When I talked to him in 2019, he was in the middle of touring his most recent show, Latin History for Morons. The title kind of explains the show's conceit. With a chalkboard and a professory outfit, Leguizamo gives the audience a history of the Americas that you don't always see in textbooks. Stories about oppression, exploitation, disease, and war. And because it's John Leguizamo, he tells these stories with funny voices, recreating historical figures who have long since died. The show starts on a personal note. Leguizamo tells a story from a few years back when his son was bullied over his heritage at school. Leguizamo wanted to do something about it, give his kid something to be proud of. He talks about that incident in the show, how it happened, how it affected his son, and as you're about to hear, how it affected him.
I leave my therapist's office with an untreated chronic case of ghetto rage. And I... Time out. Urban Dictionary time. For anybody here who doesn't know what ghetto rage is, well, it's when the whole world keeps telling you that you're worthless and you fight these microaggressions daily, but when you start to lose that battle, you start drowning in this self-loathing, burning rage. But as a Latin man, you can't even get angry because Homeland Security, the f***ing INS, or the police could decide you're a threat, and the next person to be shot or deported could be you or me. Because Latin life is cheap in America.
That was a pretty intense intro. John Leguizamo, welcome to Bullseye. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, that's one of the most intense moments in the night.
Yeah, mostly it's you goofing around and waving a copy of the Open Veins of Latin America around.
Yeah, or in my underwear, or
there's
or
an extended
chalk in my hair. Yeah.
There's an extended underwear sequence.
Yes, there is. For those people who are a fan of Breaking Bad and old men in their drawers. but that's an intense moment, and there's a few of them, but that one is sort of a call to what it's really like to be Latinx in America.
You were born in Colombia, but you grew up in New York City.
Jackson Heights. Yeah, I was here since I was three.
Yeah. So to what extent did you think of yourself as Colombian when you were a kid?
Well, you know, you always feel like you're American until until somebody others you. You know, and I remember that when I was like about 8 or 9 and I'm playing with some kids and I beat them at stickball. And then, then it would like, you know, once you go back to your country, you suck, you suck. And I was like, wow, I didn't realize, you know, and you go home, you look at yourself, oh, wow, I thought we were all the same, but I guess I'm not, you know, and then you start to realize, you know, these interactions keep continue to happen, and you start feeling more other and more other, and you start realizing, oh wow, it develops a different perspective of America, because you're no longer on the inside. You're kind of on the inside and the outside. So it gives you a bird's eye view, because you're forced to look at it from an outsider's point of view.
Growing up, you also had, by circumstance, an inside-outside perspective, because your family didn't stay in one place for very long, right?
Well, yeah, I guess it's like the typical actor's sort of genesis, you know, like they're always army brats, or like myself, you know, I moved every year of my life till I was about 15, and then started replicating that pattern later on in my life.
Was that because of work, or because of getting evicted, or because of why?
It wasn't. We weren't on the lam. We weren't on the witness protection program. It was just my parents were improving that lot in life every year. Every year we started out in an apartment where we all slept on the same bed. And then the next year we moved to another place where we had two beds, and then finally my parents had a room of their own, and we slept in the living room. Then eventually my brother and I had shared a room. You know, just every year it improved till we had a house full of renters, and they rented out every room in the house and made income that way. But, you know, it forced me to, you know, learn how to make friends real quick, real fast. And also at the same time, since I didn't have sort of shared personal stories with anybody, I always had this incredible urge to create my story with somebody. You know, I guess that's what made me want to write one-man shows and to share my story in my life, because I missed that so much growing up.
Did you have an identity as a Colombian-American? Did that mean anything to you in your life as a teenager?
A little bit. I mean, I mostly felt Latin, you know what I mean? Because I was in New York City and all my friends were all Puerto Rican, Dominican, Ecuadorian, Chilean, everybody was represented there. So I just felt Latin, you know what I mean? And so which was really nice, because I felt like that felt like a community. You know, I felt like we all speak Spanish. We all have a little bit of different food, but it's all kind of similar anyway. We all dig each other's food. We all dig salsa and merengue and cumbias, and we all dig house parties, you know. So that was my sense of community.
Yeah, I was thinking of that as I was watching your show, that, you know, growing up in California, to be Latino meant, you know, for people in my neighborhood, it meant to be Mexican,
right, right.
To some extent Salvadoran and Guatemalan.
Central American. Yeah.
And in New York, the Caribbean
is big.
Latino community is so much more powerful. Yeah. Like, I didn't know any Cuban people when I was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, I probably knew 10 Salvadorans.
The love of my life when I was 15 was a Cuban Puerto Rican girl. Yeah, I remember her well.
You want to tell me about her? Your face is beaming right
now. Oh,
yeah,
no, it was a highlight of, you know, it was a highlight of my life. I'm not going to say her name because she's probably married and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, she was stunning, and she was, you know, she was above my pay grade, so to speak.
We have so much more to get into. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is John Leguizamo. He is, of course, a super famous actor who has been in over 100 movies and TV shows, including Encanto, which just won an Academy Award. He's also written and performed in some incredible solo stage shows. When I talked to him in 2019, he just launched a national tour of Latin History for Morons. Let's get back into our conversation.
I think one of the interesting things about your career is that you did not get into comedy and acting through stand-up or through improv or sketch, although you did sketch on TV.
I did all that. Yeah. I did sketch. I did improv. I did all that.
But you were you're a theater dude. Like, end of the day, you're kind of a theater dude. Like,
I didn't really love stand-up that much. Yeah, there's only a few stand-ups that I've loved my whole life, and that's Richard Pryor and Lenny Bruce and Jonathan Winters. Those are the three guys that have, I know they're old school, but they're my heroes and my idols and the people I aspired to be, you know?
Jonathan Winters and Pryor are both very, like, I can see their influence directly in their work.
Absolutely.
Like, they are about embodying other people in their comedy.
And the personal sharing and the way that Jonathan Winters creates a whole world like nobody else has ever done, creates a whole world. You know, the spaceships, you know, he'll create all that, and he creates, you know, the guns, you know, he did all the sound effects. He loved that and loved becoming so many different people in one scene. Nobody was doing that.
But like by the time you were a teenager or a young adult, like the stand-up world was pretty dominated by the lane that, you know, Carlin and Cosby opened up, which is I'm a normal guy standing on stage telling you some ideas from my relatively normal voice.
Right,
and
which
you
is
know,
great.
Some sort of novelty acts as well, but like nothing as theatrical as Jonathan Winters.
No, nothing as theatrical as Jonathan Winters and nothing as daring as Richard Pryor. And then I took it a step further, you know. I had seen Lily Tomlin's Signs of Intelligent Life, Eric Bogosian, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, and Whoopi Goldberg. And I was like, why? Wait a minute. I can create my own brand new hybrid of everything. And no one was doing that. Like an autobiographical play of your life on Broadway. Freak. And that was my contribution to not because I thought my life was so fascinating, quite the opposite. I just felt like my life is so average that I can create sort of a mirror to a lot of Latin people to see themselves and to enjoy the struggles that we go through. Because to me, being Latin was like a superpower.
Which one of those shows was the first one that you saw?
Lily Tomlin was the first.
Did you see it in New York on stage?
I second acted it, unfortunately, because I was broke. So I only knew the second act.
So that means you walked in at intermission when nobody was guarding the doors.
Right. Thank you for explaining it to people. Yeah. You put on your best Sunday suit that you had. And I always smoked since I was 13. So I had a cigarette. And then you grab a playbill and then you run to the bathroom. And then when everybody's seated and they do the chimes, bloop, bloop, then you run to an empty seat. And that's how I watched. So that's what helped me write too, because I saw so many plays on Broadway, but only the second act. I had to imagine the first act. So that's what taught me how to write.
The first show of yours I saw was Mambo Mouth.
Oh, 1990. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I saw it a few years later on VHS.
Most likely,
1994 or something like that.
Bootleg copy, pirated.
I definitely didn't see it on HBO. I can't claim to have had HBO as a child.
Somebody filming it, you see them bouncing up and down and people crossing your front.
I definitely remember when I got basic cable, so premium cable was not in the picture.
Nobody could afford that nonsense, man. Everybody was getting it legally, and I remember trying to get all the illegal boxes so you could watch HBO.
Mambo Mouse was a show that was kind of vignettes from one neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. Very good, man.
Can you tell me a little bit about where it came from?
Well, I was in my acting career and kind of like very disappointed in Hollywood or Hollywoodn't. And the fact that I never saw Latin people in any positive way, even though we were almost equal to whites in population size in New York City, there was never anything on us anywhere. And I was going, wait a minute, what is going on here?
You had done what? Like, you had done like a few episodes
of TV or
something.
Miami Vice. I did some, I did a movie, Casualties of War, with Sean Penn and Brian De Palma and Michael J. Fox. I've done some other movies at the time. But it was all like, you know, the drug dealers, and I was so tired of that. You know, it's crazy because, look, I mean, even right now, it's a cultural apartheid. I mean, We're 35% of the population in New York City, and white people are 35% of the population of New York City. We're the same exact population size. Less than 1% of the positive stories in the New York Times or any magazine, the New Yorker, New York Magazine, the Post, are about us. And yet we're doing tons of incredible things. Latin music is number one in the world right now. J Balvin is the most played musician on Spotify. Six or seven of the top 10 hit masters are all Latin. J Balvin, Ozuna, Rosario, Camila Cabello, Cardi B, Bruno Mars, J-Lo. I mean, it's crazy. And yet, in Hollywood, where we're 50% of the population and less than 3% of the faces in front of the camera, behind the camera, that's cultural apartheid. And we buy 25% of the United States box office.
So we were talking about Mambo Mouth. So this is like you're a young man, like in your late 20s or something like that when you
Mouth? 26.
Yeah. So where did the show come from?
You want to go back to that? Okay.
Yeah.
Staying on point. I just felt the lack of representation of Latin people and what I started to see personally, sort of the exclusion of us. I wanted to talk to everybody I knew. I grew up, and so I did the show for myself and everybody I grew up with, and it's to see ourselves and to spoof the media and to spoof what was going on and how the media saw us. And so I did the show, and you know, it was in the, you know, people believed in it, but not really. They didn't know what to do with me. So they put me in the hallway of the American Place Theater. And I went up at 7. I had to be done by 9 where the real main stage show would go on in the real theater. I had 70 fold-up seats. But then the reviews came out, and there was Al Pacino in the house and Sam Shepard and Arthur Miller, Olympia Dukakis, George Plimpton. I mean, here were all these illustrious people in this tiny hallway in a makeshift platform stage. And then they would remove all my stuff, and I would make sure I would run around real quick and shake hands with, you know, Sam Shepard and talk to him and Arthur Miller. And that was the beginning of what I wanted to do. But not till it was on HBO did it really reach the audience I was dreaming of targeting. You know, when it hit HBO, everybody had their bootleg copy of Mambo Mouth. And people started recognizing me on the street. And filled with so much joy that I could represent them in a way. You know, it was very interesting for them to feel seen. To feel seen is such an incredible feeling for a Latinx person when you don't see yourself seen except negatively constantly.
I feel like the thing that was moving to me at the time when I saw the show, when I was 13 or whatever it was while I grew up in a, you know, West Coast city, completely different from New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
I still felt very deeply this thing about living in the city, which is the number of people that you see in every action that you take, every time you go to the corner store or bodega, every time you go to the corner store, you know, the people that you interact with, and every single one of those people is a human being with a full life.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you have windows into little pieces of their life. But what I loved about the show was that it felt like it was an attempt to show the humanity of all these people that surround us in a place like the city.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that was my purpose. I wanted to show people how funny we are, and to celebrate our culture. But I had a dark side, so it was always had a dark element to it. You know, I always felt like American comedy was kind of light and glib. And I think I helped change that in comedy to add a lot more darkness, a lot more edge, a lot more aggressiveness, and a lot more sexuality to it, you know.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is John Leguizamo. Let's listen to a clip from Leguizamo's first off-Broadway show, Mambo Mouth. In the show, John plays 7 different characters from his past growing up in New York City. Manny the Fanny is one of them, a sex worker with a sharp wit and a good heart. In this clip, Manny's telling a story about being cheated on and getting revenge.
When I caught wind and I did, Sleeping Beauty awoke. And I came home early one night and I unscrewed all the bulbs in the house and I hid in the closet with an iron in one hand y crazy glue la otra. And I waited. 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I thought he was never gonna come, right? But at exactly midnight, in sachets, the Judas hijo de p, right? Trying to turn the lights on and calling my name all lovey-dovey and such. Oh, Manny, baby, I got something for you. I got something for you. I got something for you too, p. And I just held my breath, cause this girl wasn't about to let his magic wand cast a spell on her again.
I think I like my memory was vividly triggered by crazy glue in la otra.
Crazy stories, man. I mean, yeah, they're all like sort of compilations of things I had heard people tell me in urban legend, and just personified it. You know, gave it a body and a voice.
There's kind of a sweetness to it. Like I know that you're telling us about how edgy and dark you are.
Yeah,
and that's true. Sure.
Oh yeah.
Very sexual, etc.
True that.
One of the things I remember is, you know, some of these characters are big, but they all have a real, like, you have a real regard for all of them.
Right, a respect. And I respect their lives no matter how different they are from mine. I feel like we all share this planet and we're all other eyes, so I got to give them some heart, you know? I mean, I always felt like I connected to everybody.
When you wrote Freak, it was one of the first times you had really written about yourself.
Right. That was the first time, because Spikorama was kind of me and my family, but it was all fictionalized, which is it's what people usually do. And then by Freak, I was like, no, there's a lot of stuff that I need to talk about that happened to me personally that I hope gives other people inspiration, you know, just growing up in New York City and just how aggressive, you know, my situation was at home and outside and how you survive it. And humor was what saved me.
More with John Leguizamo still to come. After the break, we'll talk about how he deals with racism nowadays, both as a writer and as a father. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Max Fun Drive is just around the corner.
2022.
Starting April 25th, it's the best time of the year to support your favorite shows by becoming a Max Fun member or upgrading your membership.
In just 2 weeks.
We've got some great episodes and amazing thank you gifts in store. And who knows, maybe a few surprises.
Don't forget bonus content.
So make sure to tune in starting Monday, April 25th to get all the juicy details on what each show has in store.
Actually, wait, what are the details anyway? And why are they juicy? That's kind of a strange adjective to describe.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is John Leguizamo. He's the star of Encanto and the solo stage show Latin History for Morons.
There's a moment in the new show where you are portraying yourself in therapy with your therapist.
My new therapist of the time. Yeah. Which I love, Dr. T.
You're now therapist.
My current therapist.
Who you describe as talking like Tim Gunn. And you're, you know, sort of the through line of the show is that you're looking for a Latin hero for your kid who's writing a history report, right? And there's this moment where you're sitting in therapy and your therapist asks you in his Tim Gunn voice, well, if you're looking for a Latin hero, what about your father? And you don't do much with that in the show. You kind of let it lie. You kind of move in a different direction from there. But it's very powerful because you don't reply with,
right.
thanks for the insight, Dr. T.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of what your, you know, Freak and your other autobiographical work has been about. That's a
right.
significant
thing. Yeah, I mean, Freak was all about my coming of age and my relationship with my dad. And I felt like I had dealt with it. And I was hoping that, you know, the people coming to see me already had the history, the backstory. And if you didn't, you know, you can look it up or you can make it up in your mind, you know, as to why he's not my hero.
I mean, I think it's particularly consequential because of the fact that the reason you're looking for a hero is for your own son.
Right. Because he cut to 2012 and my son is being bullied at school the same way that I was bullied. And it's like, how is this happening in the modern world? How is this happening in New York City in this private school? And you're like, it can't be happening to my son. I can't. And so that's why that was kind of the genesis of the show, was my trying to give my son facts and Latin heroes and Latin contributions and things he could fight and arm himself with, ammunition to defend himself without using his fists, without having to resort to the way that I grew up. And I wanted to be an evolved dad. And what ended up happening was like, oh my God, I'm the one that's being unmoronized. I'm the one that's being destupefied and shown that we Latin people made America. You know, the facts that I started to come up with were crazy. Like, we're the second oldest ethnic group in America after Native Americans. That we're the only ethnic group that has fought in every single war America's ever had. That we're the most decorated minority in each and every single war. And I'm talking about American Revolutionary War, where 10,000 unrecognized Latino patriots fought, where we had Cuban women in the American Revolution in Virginia sell their jewelry, the hoop earrings, the door knockers, and gold teeth to feed their patriots. And Galvez, who had an army of misfits, of like they're like the Mets of armies, he had 3,000 Puerto Ricans, Cubans, Mexican-Americans, freed slaves, and Native Americans. And he was like the George Washington of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Pensacola. He kicked the British out. Then he donates $70,000 worth of weapons to George Washington. So we too are the sons and daughters of the American Revolution. These facts changed me. I can no longer be the John I used to be before these facts. I have been transformed. No one can make me feel less anymore.
How important is it to you that your identity encompasses, as you said, being Latin, right? Being Latino or Latinx, rather than being Colombian or Puerto Rican, or in addition to being Colombian or Puerto Rican, that there is a commonality with people who are in, you know, people who are in Peru and people who are in the Dominican and people who are in, you know, Chihuahua.
I just feel like they're my brothers and sisters. Just like Americans feel like Californians and New Yorkers are brothers and sisters. I mean, I feel their pain. I feel their joy. And I just think a little bit of an accent and a different spice in your food is not going to make me feel different than you. It's not enough to differentiate me from you. I see them come to my shows, people from all walks of life, because when I start drawing the South American map, Central American, Caribbean, you hear everybody.
Yeah.
It's their shout out time. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just like in the audience, somebody's just going, Mofongo!
Yeah. when you get to the Dominican, and I go, O tigre, which is my Dominican shout out. And it's beautiful to see it. And you know what? Here I'm on the West Coast. Obviously, it's so interesting because when I'm in New York, when I say Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and South America, you know, the place you can't even hear because it's so loud. And here's the opposite. When I go to Mexico, it's boom, you know, And then Puerto Rico is a little smaller. Colombia is small. And Dominican Republic is small. It's like, oh, wow, so interesting. But they still shout out in the same sort of proud, powerful way to be heard and seen.
I felt like they had that. There's two moments in the show where the audience has that reaction. One is when you're drawing a map on the blackboard, as right. you described, and talking a little bit about the different places in Latin America.
And the populations of the empires, yeah.
Yeah.
Taino, Incan, Aztec.
And there's another moment where you just list dance beats. Like, you're like, okay, cumbia.
Right, right. You're like, tango.
Go through the yeah. list. And like, you can tell where people's loyalties lie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there's certain music, you know, like I know a lot of Puerto Rican people say, where's salsa? But I have it in the, it's a closing song is salsa.
Yeah, because it was conspicuous enough to me.
I would end up being like,
so I know people are serious about their salsa. If you're not the right salsero, they're gonna get up in your business.
Oh
about
yeah,
it.
they got up in my business. And I was like, you're right. I couldn't weave it in correctly, and I just couldn't do more because I'm already exhausted.
Like, I'm still working on that cha-cha. Oh, boy.
But I got the cha-cha, I got the bombo, I got the samba, and I got the cumbia and the, what was the opening one? Tango.
Yeah.
So I covered a lot. And then I got merengue in there. I got merengue later on when I went up, when I'm doing the talking to the policeman and trying to pass for white, and then he puts on the merengue and I can't stop dancing, and then I out myself.
Do you think your son has a different relationship to being Latino than you do?
Yeah, you know, because my son is half, you know, he's half white and half, you know, he's a mixed kid, and he's, you know, half Jewish. So yeah, he's a little bit of different, you know, it's a little bit different. He, you know, because he presents whiter. You know, so that has a lot to do with it.
Does he present as white? Like, do you think he passes if nobody says anything?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But you know, but he's got his deep heritage. You know, he always listens to hip hop. Hip hop is his jam. You know, he tried to speak Spanish. You know, he loves girls of color, so it's all good.
How do you think his experience is different other than just being half? Like, what do you think it means to him that's different? Because part of this show is about you trying to teach him something about yeah. what it means.
Right, because, yeah, I mean, he was racially profiled mostly, I guess, because of his relationship to me. So... I mean, I guess it hasn't been that long yet, you know. That's the problem with using your traumas in your work. Because, you know, you're talking about stuff that's really, really painful. And as my therapist says, he says it's like you play God with your own trauma by putting into your art. Then you have control of it and it doesn't control you. Which is such a beautiful way of putting it.
I mean, I know a lot of comics, and I often think that doing comedy is a way of controlling your relationships in the same way.
Like, yep. It's a way of dealing. All art is dealing with, I mean, back then they used to say just fixations or obsessions, but a lot of it is just really trauma or the issues that demonize you, that control you.
I imagine that you wanted your kids to feel like that part of them that came from you was great and beautiful
mm-hmm.
and not a source of pain or a stumbling block or whatever.
Right. I mean, I definitely wanted them to feel pride about themselves and their Jewish side is called, and of their white side. You know, I'm not anti-white. I mean, that's crazy. You know, I want them to be proud of being white and Jewish, and as much as they are Latin, Indian, and Black in them. You know, I want it all to be equal. Just asking to be equal. That's all.
Well, John Leguizamo, I'm grateful to you for taking the time, and I'm grateful to you for doing this work for yourself and your family and for everybody that sees the show.
Thank you, my brother.
John Leguizamo, Latin History for Morons, has wrapped up its U.S. tour. You can watch the show on Netflix. Encanto, the Academy Award-winning animated movie in which he starred, is available to rent or stream on all kinds of different platforms right now. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Here in my office, I just got one of those Dr. Pepper 10-2-4 clocks. I've always wanted to have one. I found one that was broken at the flea market. I went and got it fixed with a clock repair guy. It's up on my wall right now. I'm loving it. 10-2-4 is when you're supposed to have a Dr. Pepper to pep up your day. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. It is not sponsored by Dr. Pepper, although we would accept such a sponsorship. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio, Valerie Moffitt, and Richard Roby. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation by the Go Team. Thanks very much to them and to their label Memphis Industries for sharing it. Bullseye is on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Find us there. Give us a follow. We'll share with you all of our interviews. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology, hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why people do the things they do. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen. This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? These are all things parents ask when they home shop. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.